Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program as we get set to open the doors to someone else's world and their area of interest and expertise, their passion for life and love and living and bringing about a better place for all of us. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We broadcast live on the internet. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and you can also hear the archive of these programs at richarddugan.com. We have all of the programs for the previous 3.5 years. I'm about to fall out of my chair. 3.5 years I've been doing this program, and it seems like we just started yesterday. Nonetheless, I also want to let you know about a special event that's coming up, and it's coming up next weekend. It is the 12th, and I'm going to confirm this as we get into our interview. I'll let you know at the bottom of the hour for certain. There's a film called The Economics of Happiness. It's going to be shown at the Center of the Heart here in Santa Barbara, just off of Turnpike. And it's a fascinating film that's talking about the GPH. The GPH, the gross national, GDH, I believe it is, the gross domestic, if you will, although some would say national or international, happiness index. You've heard of the gross national product, the GNP? Well, this is sort of the GNH. That's the right acronym. The Gross National Happiness Index. And how we're not there and how people are getting us there. The gentleman that I had the opportunity to talk with is the founder and the publisher of Hope Dance magazine. It's online at hopedance.org. You can get more information about it there as well. They're showing this film next weekend. I believe it is the 12th of March at the Center of the Heart, just off of Turnpike. Go to hopedance.org to get further information. It's fascinating, a film that you're going to want to see and learn more about. We're beginning to realize that we're not a very happy people for a lot of reasons, but there are a lot of reasons for us to be very happy and how we can foster that in the hearts and the minds of others. That's part of what we try to do here on this program. Bring some joy into your life. Bring some energy and excitement. And I hope that we're going to do that with this program today as we talk with the author of a new book. Actually, it's more of a revision of an old book, but it's talking about a test. It's a personality test that at one point, personality tests were very controversial. But from his perspective, our guest's perspective, we're looking at ourselves, as we often do, and as we're sort of learning to do more, to understand who we are, why we are, and why we are where we are, and how we can get to where we truly want to be by understanding the first elements and then moving forward. And we're going to introduce to you right now Dr. David Daniel, who is the author of The Essential Enneagram. And it's a fascinating book. It's dealing with personalities. And, Doctor, first of all, welcome to our program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to being with you.
And I guess for what I like to do at the beginning of most programs is define terms. What, in synopsis, if you will, is an Enneagram?
Right. Thank you very much. Well, Enneagram, Ennea or Ennea, is simply Greek for nine. And if the Pentagon in the United States had had nine sides, everybody would know what an Enneagon rather than a Pentagon was.
Uh-huh, okay.
Enneagon or Enneagram, it means like a nine-sided figure with nine points of view on it. And it means that there's nine fundamental personality styles. And then I always like to remind people, wait a minute, we're human beings that just happen to have a type structure. Because we can end up stereotyping each other along, you're this and you're that, and that's good and that's not, and all that kind of stuff. No type is any better than any other. So it's a typology that tells us about the patterns of how we feel, how we think, and how we understand the world. And we all have filters over our, you know, if you will, over our heads, our hearts, and our bodies. So none of us see all of reality. We just see a segment of it. We don't even know we have these filters on. And lots of times when people first wake up, they go, oh my gosh, you didn't think like me? And so it's very powerful because the Enneagram gets right down to the core beliefs that are non-conscious underneath, that were acquired really, really early in childhood, although influenced also by our hereditary or DNA, the very basic fundamental beliefs about how to have a decent life. And, of course, as we grow up and as we mature, these become less and less relevant to us, but we still are owned by them because they're so rooted into us as these patterns of adaptation in the world. And we'll get to that when we do a little tour of the types, but it's very fundamental about how we think, how we feel, and how we react in the world, and it gets right down to core motivation. So, you know, we all have a pattern, more or less, and when people tell me, I don't believe in patterns or typologies, I go like, well, you're more or less the same person every morning, I hope, because imagine if you woke up with your partner being a different person every day, it would be really a disaster. So all of us do recognize we have some kind of pattern. People do recognize this and so forth. So it's just a way of understanding ourselves. And myself, having come from a psychiatry background, I hated typologies because the ones we had were really awful. You know, you get to be called obsessive-compulsive or narcissistic or passive-aggressive or paranoid or goes on and on and on, schizoid, dependent. And so I would never even use those diagnoses because it was like putting people in a box. But the Enneagram's about understanding the box we're already in because we do have a pattern and how to get out of that box, how to be more liberated, how to be more free, how to become more whole person, which is the purpose of life anyway, I believe, to become a more whole person. It's more understanding of a self and others and can change and grow and flourish. So that's what attracted me to the Enneagram, despite hating typologies.
And the reality is that for anybody who is going to sit and set up a series of types, personality types, they themselves will fall into one of those types as well. I mean, we all do. Nobody is, no one's immune from that. And it's just kind of what we do as human beings. We want to categorize things. We want to have everything in a nice little, I'll use your term, we want to have it in a nice little box. We want to have it in order so that we can understand it and figure it out. But even as human beings, even as an individual, we're difficult to understand and figure out. I mean, we have trouble doing that with ourselves, let alone with other people.
Yes, and when we can wake up ourselves and become more self-observant, we'll go into the process we use to help people, you know, grow and change. But when you can really wake up and you can begin to really experience and see your pattern, to observe it, to have an inner witness, to have a self-observer that can notice the pattern and explore that and get down to the basis of it, often there's a very relatively quick path to freedom, because we'll get into some of this as we do a little tour, but it's amazing how we all get owned by old belief systems that we thought were going to be very useful and turn out not to be so useful.
Now,
the other thing,
go ahead.
The other thing the Enneagram does that's so important is it's a way of understanding and linking more to our essential self, to our higher qualities, to the essential qualities, those qualities that underlie all external manifestations and are permanent and lasting. Such qualities as hope and faith and love and holy truth, etc., that are, you know, really there underneath all of this, and we've just gone away from them. And to be able to understand our personality and reclaim and come back to our higher qualities and integrate those, that is, link them together with our personality, is a huge path of liberation.
Now, let me ask you as we continue on here, I would like to go into, in this segment, the nine types. But before I do, I brought this up before we started the program, and I want to get your opinion on this as it relates to the Enneagram. And that is this concept that came out, at least in my experience, it came out in about the mid-'80s, mid-late 80s. That's the 1980s, ladies and gentlemen. And it had to do with an idea that a gentleman had come up with in relating personality traits, characteristics of one's life, to the order in which they were born to in a family. And I know that with a lot of these types of things, including with the Enneagram, if I'm correct, there's always controversy, especially when it starts out at the beginning. Then when people start to understand it a little bit more, there's a little more acceptance. But then when people start to scrutinize it a little bit more, and then you start to say, well, gee, I don't know. How does something like this relate to, or maybe not, to the Enneagram?
Well, if you wanted to just get a little bit to birth order, there's actually that goes back further than that into psychoanalytical thinking. You know, birth order is a big a part of that, but there's been a lot of more newer data that says there's other things that are really important. And one of the things that's called non-shared family environment. It's a technical term, but it means like it's like a big chunk of what makes us up is. It's different for each child in the family. They start to see the world quite differently, and they each have a drive for differentiation. So whatever the first child is, the second child probably wants to be different, just to be their own selves, to differentiate, to be your own person. And I know I just didn't want to be like my sister. She was a kind, good person, but from my point of view, I didn't want to be like that. I didn't want to be her. I wanted to be my own person. And I think we find that in families. So it's not so much about birth order, but it's about differentiation. And there again, of course, people can you can have two of the same type in a family. There's lots of variables that go into that, but it's not just determined by birth order.
All right, so let's talk about the nine types and give just a brief synopsis of each.
Okay, I'd be delighted to do that. I'll just start out with their number, type 1 to 9, and again, no type is any more or less healthy than any other type. I'll start with a perfectionist, and as we know, this is a type that believes, like, what if you really believed? You've just got to be good and right, you know, as best you possibly can be in order to be worthy and to be loved and feel secure in the world, the three basic needs. So consequently, you're going to be conscientious. You're going to be responsible. You're going to be improvement-oriented. Sometimes ones get even called improvement junkies. They want to make the world better. They want to make you better. They want to make themselves better. And they tend to be self-controlled. But the downside, because we all have positives or, you know, wonderful things, is that they can be overly critical and can be judgmental and kind of resentful and quite self-judging. And so they need to be helped to just reduce the dominance of the critical mind, you know, and see different errors as just different rather than one's the right way and one isn't the right way. So that's the one, the perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
Moving to type two, which we call the giver. Some people call it the helper. It believes that. Now, what if you believe this? You believe you've got to give fully to other people in order to be loved. You can't even pay attention to your own wants and needs. You just focus out there on everybody else. And so you're going to be caring and helpful and supportive and, you know, very relationship-oriented. But you can also think you know better what everybody else needs than they know themselves. Be kind of prideful and think of yourself as indispensable. And you can be overly intrusive, like, I know better what you need than you know yourself. So they have to learn how to come back more to themselves, to have their own separate self, you know, their own distinct self, and to not be addicted to meeting the needs of everybody else all the time and getting more into receiving, being in the natural flow of giving and receiving. The third type, the performer or motivator, it's sometimes called. Now, just imagine this. What if you believe that you've got to be accomplishment-oriented? You've got to be successful. You've got to achieve. That's the way you're going to get love. You know, consequently, You're going to be very industrious. You're going to be fast-paced. It's sort of the American ideal, focused on goals and efficiency-oriented. You know, how fast and how good can I get stuff done? And, you know, but also you're going to be inattentive to your own feelings because you're going to be moving forward so fast to try to get everything done. You'll be impatient with others. The way you can get upset is that somebody is too slow and they're not getting the job done. And they're going to be image-driven, too. So they need to be helped to be able to kind of pace down some, slow down, to welcome in more of their feelings and realize that love comes from not just from doing, but from your own being and your own better qualities. Remember, the worst thing that could happen there would be you'd be such a failure that nobody'd want you. And by the way, the two up above, what if you were totally useless to others? You know, that would be the end of the world. And for the ones, the end of the world would be like, what if you're just totally wrong, totally unworthy of anything? So moving to type 4, Now, again, here, try to adopt this for a second, anybody listening especially. It believes that you've got to be this whole, special, complete, unique person, not have anything missing at all that's important. And find the ideal relationship in which everything is there. You know, it's like if you're not whole and complete, who are you? You're deficient. Who'd want you? So you could be, imagine, very idealistic in many, many profound ways. You're going to be deep feeling. You're going to be very empathetic toward things. You want to be authentic. You want to be real. Now, the downside of that is that you can also be, you concentrate so much on this idealization that you can be kind of dramatic and kind of moody and sometimes get overly absorbed in way things could be and not be appreciating enough of everything that's right there in the present moment, you know, because you're seeing all the ways in which the world isn't complete and whole at any one particular time. So your whole task is to appreciate more what's there and, you know, relax a little more into what is there and rather than what's missing. So that's the romantic or sometimes called the individualist.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the observer or sometimes called the thinker. This one we all know, these people too. It's like you believe that you've got to be self-sufficient, independent, and not, you know, not be in a position where you could be drained because it's like you have had the experience as a child that people would come in and demand too much of you. And they might drain you. They want too much of your time, too much of your energy, or they wouldn't give you enough. It's not like the world, instead of sustaining you and supporting you and nurturing you, it's going to drain you. So by being self-sufficient, you're going to protect yourself. So you're going to be, your good qualities are going to be, you'll be pretty independent. You'll be a kind of live and let live philosophy. You're not going to intrude on others. You don't want them to intrude on you. You don't want to drain anybody. You just don't want to be drained. You'll be knowledgeable, and you'll be thoughtful. But I mean, unobtrusive, like I was saying, but, you know, the other side of it is, from the other person's perspective, you can be kind of withholding and sort of overly detached and overly private. And you don't, other people don't know what's going on with you. So you need to learn how to come to appreciate the difference between just getting detached all the time and just being in the natural good flow of life energy, you know, realizing that you're going to be nurtured, not just drained by others. And, you know, the negative part, like I said, it could be like you get kind of withdrawn and withholding, and you need to learn how to get reengaged in life and, you know, welcome back in feelings. So moving to type 6 on the Enneagram, sometimes called a loyalist or loyal skeptic, that happens to be my type. Remember, we're all human beings and just happen to have a type structure. It's like you believe that you have to gain certainty and security in a world that's unpredictable and hazardous. And, of course, my own childhood, early childhood experience was that I couldn't count on the world. I couldn't even trust things. My mother had almost died in childbirth just before antibiotics. And so I think everybody was frightened that she wasn't going to live. And then I was allergic to cow's milk because she couldn't nurse. And I didn't thrive. I mean, it's like you couldn't even trust. Imagine this, Richard. You couldn't even trust what's coming in your mouth those first few months.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody was afraid I was going to die. You know,
yeah.
He's not going to make it. And so it's like you couldn't count on the world. And I just realized this, of course, much later, that there's a world you couldn't trust in. And so, you know, my whole tactic was to be trustworthy myself. Then at least I could maybe count on you more and be a good, loyal person and be good friends and be a good questioner and, you know, can see what can go wrong. Because if the world can't be trusted, you got to test it. You got to figure it out. You got to doubt it. And underneath, you have a certain amount of fear because fear tells you what's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the negative parts I didn't even want to see in the beginning, of course, because overly doubtful, who wants to be that?
Yeah.
Even accusatory of others, fearful. I mean, I've had this long-term lovely marriage to my sweetie for now over 50 years, and it took me like 40 years to believe she really loved me, you know? I mean, doubting mind was there. And all our arguments would be over what would upset me was, can I count on you? Well, she's very dependable, very loving, but you can always find some data. Nobody's 100% accountable all the time. then my attention would go to how I couldn't count on and not how I could. I hope you can understand that.
Oh, the kind of the irony is that I can. I mean, in that I find it interesting that in relationships that the male is usually looking at the female and takes at face value in that moment the character and the love and the warmth and so forth. And that the reverse isn't necessarily true, that it's more the collected works or bad works or good works that will be thrown back up at you, that will, as you say, you can put together all of this evidence, and it's really unfortunate in that respect that we can't just at face value just trust and know that that person loves us and that we love them and that they're going to be there for us. And at the same time, these different personality traits are not unique, certainly, to the Enneagram, but nonetheless, they are a process that you have worked with for a number of years. And I'm curious as to how this Enneagram personality profiling test, if you will, or program or process measures, if it can measure, the more esoteric aspects of an individual's character. When we're born into this world, as you and I both were, we were looked at, and various individuals would say, oh, so-and-so has Aunt Martha's nose or Uncle Fred's eyebrows or, you know, what have you. And as they grow, oh, that's Brother Fred's temper, you know, or Aunt Melissa's laughter. But we never seem to be able to do the same thing when it comes to the spiritual or more soulish aspects of an individual. And yet my perspective and belief is that in addition to the physical, mental, and emotional attributes of our ancestors, we also take on, at least in some respects, even the spiritual aspects. Do these tests reveal any of that?
Yes, well, each of the types, and I think this is really, really, really important about the Enneagram, has a higher spiritual or essential quality that they've gone away from. So just using myself as the example again, what's gone into the background is that sense of holy faith and trust in the world. And, of course, with that, the other higher qualities like love and hope can go into the background too. And so as you learn and you relax in the path through the for the six is to become their own authority again, to mm-hmm. trust more in themselves and not blame the world. And as you come back to that, it's like, may I come back to more faith? And each of the types has a higher quality to come back to.
Yeah.
And then all the higher qualities, because they come back to unity, you know, just come back naturally. How can you have real faith without also having hope and love? And so, you know, the performer that I was mentioning before, it's all about coming back to holy hope, which means I don't have to do everything. You know, there's hope in the world. There's hope in humanness if I'm just here and present for it. And so you come back to a higher quality, and when you come back to that, you know, that higher quality of hope in the future for everyone and not just dependent upon what you do and accomplish, I mean, that the universe will be able to, you know, support you as well as you support it. So all of the types have a higher quality to come back to, which is, I think, just amazing.
It is indeed.
Perfectionist needs to come back to the holy oneness, the holy perfection, which is that in essence, we're all loved. We're all back in unity. I mean, I know that sounds a little out there, but it's like when you're really there in total full presence, there's nobody better than or less than somebody else, nobody right, nobody wrong. And when your heart's totally open and their hearts are all open, I mean, everybody is there in unity again. And it comes back to what's called holy perfection.
Interesting.
So all the types have that.
Interesting. Well, we're going to continue talking about not only the types, but also the test itself, the process that one can go through to help to define what their personality is. And then we'll take it to the next step. And, okay, so now that I know that I'm this type 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Now what do I do with this information? As if I didn't already have enough information about myself, how can I be sure it's accurate? And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we continue. My guest is Dr. David Daniels, the author of The Essential Enneagram, and we're going to continue here on AM 1290, and we're going to talk more about this and other things when we get back.
What's the most important factor in selecting a roofing contractor? What good is your bargain-priced roof when you discover that the contractor's no longer in business when you have a problem? Jack at Action Roofing has been serving Carpinteria Tascante Inez for over 20 years, a statement very few can make. Experience means good advice on selecting the correct roofing material, appropriate ventilation control, optional skylights, and most importantly, professional installation. Guaranteed. From composition to slate or concrete tiles, Jack at Action Roofing will recommend the best roof that fits the style of your house, as well as the budget of your wallet. Let Action Roofing give you the peace of mind knowing you properly cover the biggest investment you own. Action Roofing's gutter and downspout division will protect your eaves from dry rot and prevent water from pooling at your foundation. When was the last time you had a gutter and downspout tune-up? Take action. Call Action Roofing at 966-3696. 966-3696.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
Till I got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. I may want to get you a man hold right now for the go, no go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you for joining us here on the program. We're going to take our usual pause when we're doing a live broadcast, talk with our AAA editor, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, Beth McDonald, who is here in Santa Barbara with us, to share with us some insights into what's going on in the world. I have to say that, Beth, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you, David. It's so good to hear you.
It's one of those things where I wasn't here last week, in spite of the fact that we did play a broadcast, a previous interview that I did with Greg Braden on January 1st, and I was suffering through that stuff that that seems to be going around, and I was literally in bed for 2 days trying to recoup from this thing, and it's just, it's like, enough already. I'm already slow enough as it is. I don't need this to slow me up anymore. But there you hear that, folks? That's it. But at the same time, I do acknowledge that I take the philosophical perspective that the body is saying, okay, you need to stop. You need to rest. You've been going at it for whatever length of time, and it's time for you to take a pause. And if you won't do it for yourself, well, then the universe steps in and says, whammo. So a lot of people are faced with this. For some, I guess it can be serious, but looking at it from a more philosophical perspective, how does this tie in with what you have with us today?
Well, interesting. There's a theory in metaphysics that...
Beth, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay.
Oops.
Go ahead and just speak up there, Beth.
Okay. There's a theory in metaphysics that sometimes we get really sick right before we take a great leap forward. And hello, are you there?
You're there.
Awesome. Okay. And so a lot of times it's your body kind of purifying yourself and preparing yourself for this next great leap. And in the last couple of weeks, there's been a rolling energy through Aquarius into Pisces. And there was a new moon yesterday. New moons are new beginnings. And so it's a massive time of clearing out and starting anew. And I love the topic for today because Pisces rules the oneness. It is that eternal quest to connect and commune, especially with each other and with the stronger forces of the universe, the universal will, the oversoul, as Emerson called it. You know, whatever God is for you, you know, when there's a lot of energy in Pisces the way there is now, you are more inclined to turn to it, and when there's new beginnings, you need it more.
Yeah. Well, I know that you know, every week it's a new beginning. We start over on, depending on your perspective,
right,
on Sunday or Monday.
Or Friday even.
Or Friday,
yeah,
depending upon your perspective.
Yeah.
And we start a new week and we say, okay, this is going to be the week that I do whatever it is that they're going to do.
Yes.
And you have been sharing with us that this is the time period in which we need to start doing those. And a lot of people are. They're making massive changes on the three levels. In some instance, one, two, and some, for some people who can handle it, all three levels. And it's quite extraordinary. So we're going to talk with you in 2 weeks because you're going back to my hometown next week.
Yes, I'm going to be in Phoenix next week.
Well, I hope it's cool for you, but don't count on it.
It's looking like 80 degrees.
That's not cool, not from my perspective. But nonetheless, have a great time.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you next week. People can get a hold of you through BethMcDonaldConsulting.com.
Excellent.
And I will touch base with you following the broadcast.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
And I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Ropa Chari bring you this January health tip.
Here's today's Chari Center of Health quick tip for weight loss. Make a commitment today to make good health and body fitness a priority in your life. Health is a priceless gift and is wealth. We are committed to enhancing your health. Start the day right and eat breakfast. Your mom was right. A good healthy breakfast gets your metabolism kicked off for the day. Eating breakfast is good for weight loss. In fact, people who eat breakfast are more likely to maintain a healthy weight. People falsely believe that skipping breakfast is a strategy for losing weight, but that's not true. The body needs to be refueled a few times each day, starting with breakfast. When you skip breakfast, you are more likely to become tired because your brain and body run low on fuel. Studies have shown that children who eat breakfast actually do better in school. Of course, the same logic applies to adults, since you both feel better and perform better at work.
Making a healthy breakfast, what should you eat? Ideally, a healthy breakfast should contain both protein and fiber. Protein can come from eggs or beans. Fiber can be found in whole grains, vegetables, and fruits. A good example of a healthy breakfast might be something simple, like a hard-boiled egg, an apple, and a bowl of oatmeal with a little cinnamon or a whole grain cereal made with water. Avoid sugary cereals, syrups, pastries, and white breads because they are digested quickly, raise your blood sugar, cause weight gain, and will leave you feeling hungry and tired in a couple of hours, whereas protein and fiber satisfy your hunger and will keep you feeling full until lunchtime. Be good to yourself and know that eating a healthy breakfast is the best way to start off your day.
Take your health to the next level for the new year. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
Tell me your story, new paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful Saturday afternoon here on the Central Coast where I just happen to be. It's beautiful. It's like, 65, 67 degrees, light cloud layer above with sunshine throughout and blue skies. And it's just a great day to be out and about. What am I doing here in the studio? I'm talking with Dr. David Daniels, the author of The Essential Enneagram. And, Doctor, we left off at number 6, so we're ready for number 7 in the 9 personality types.
Great. Okay, well, the 7 we call the epicure. Some people call it the adventure. And the belief is that in order to have a good life, you just got to keep it up and flowing, and that'll bring you the kind of security that you need. It's a child that experiences there's pain in life, but you can escape it. People come in and they frustrate you and they try to limit you, but you can escape it. And so you focus on becoming really optimistic and upbeat, and you're pleasure-seeking and you're adventurous. It's all real good positive stuff, but on the downside, you can imagine you can only see the positive, can't see the dark side of the moon, so to speak. You can be actually pain-avoidant when you need to face something painful. and be uncommitted, because you can see commitment is kind of confining you and limiting you. And it can even be kind of self-serving, because it's sort of like, well, I'm good, I'm okay, what's the matter with you? That's the downside of it. And, you know, the whole path back is to be able to not be so often all the interrelated future plans and everything, but to come back and be really present and in the moment, and be able to focus your concentration and treat other people equal to yourself, not more or less than, but just really equal to yourself, and make lasting commitments and accept the whole range of life, because you can't fully experience pleasure and joy if you haven't ever experienced pain and sorrow. And so it's like, to get the whole flow of life and all of it, you need to accept that part that you've been avoiding. So that's the Epicure. The Protector, you know, again, to get those three basic needs met for self-worth and for love and security, believes you've got to be strong and powerful. And in order to share worth, it's a world that's going to come in, and the powerful and other people will take advantage of you. And you're not going to let that happen. You happen to have a big energy, a big exuberant energy. I think that infant is born with that big exuberant energy. And the worst thing that could happen would be you'd be utterly powerless in this world that's going to take advantage of you, where people impose their sense of truth on you. So you're going to be real direct. You're going to be strong. You're going to be action-oriented. You're going to be even kind of impulsive, and you're going to be, you don't even know it maybe, but you're going to be overly impactful because you've got this big exuberant energy. And you can be excessive and even sometimes impulsive. We see a lot of leaders in this style, and they get on their kind of my way or the highway thing, and it can really, you know, be a disaster for them and for others. It's a kind of all or nothing way of attending in the world. So they have to learn to kind of notice their intensity and reduce some impulsiveness, because it's really from, you know, just thought to action and almost immediately sometimes. And appreciate, you know, the vulnerability or tenderness is not weakness. It's not powerlessness. It's actually another strength to be able to be tender as well as strong and tough. And you come to realize and moderate your impact on others. That's the path for the aider, the protector, or assertor, some people call it. And then the last type we haven't covered, that's my sweetie, actually, the nine, or the mediator. Again, I want to emphasize we're all human beings. And by the way, we all have some of every type, or we wouldn't even be able to relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we have one fundamental adaptive or coping strategy. So the mediator or peacemaker, it's a type that came to believe, well, you just got to blend into this world. You can't make too big a deal of yourself. And you'll be seen as insignificant and unimportant if you make a big deal of yourself. So in order to be loved and valued, you have to kind of push yourself to the background and seek harmony and seek comfort and be steady and be loving. But in the same process, you can lose track of your own priorities and substitute other things for yourself and be conflict avoidant, because you want life to be comfortable and harmonious. And you know, sometimes we just have to face a conflict, and trying to avoid it just makes it worse. So they have to learn to pay more attention to their own self and their own priorities and to determine them and act on them. And also, paradoxically, we all have a paradox too, welcome in discomfort and change. The higher quality of the nine is called holy love, and that's, again, where you love yourself equal to every other sentient being, but not more or less than. And when there's love from self to others and love of others, then we come come back to holy love, or the higher quality of love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the mediator. And that, again, that was my sweetie, who was this really steady, loving woman. And I had to wake up as this doubting six and come to the realization that the trouble was in me not trusting, not in her not being someone you could count on.
Now, you've...
That's a little tour.
And I appreciate the tour. I want to ask you, you know, sort of answered one of my questions having to do with the blending of these personalities, that we actually have various characteristics of some of the other personalities in the main one, correct?
Yes.
And now that we know
we have some of the characteristics of all of them. If I had zero of what you have and you had zero of what I had, we'd be like from two different planets.
Well, that, yeah, okay, you have a very good very good point there. So now that we know what the personality traits are, and people can certainly pick up the Essential Enneagram at their local bookstores, or go to enneagramworldwide.com and get more information, as well as order the book. The purpose, as we even started talking at the front end of the program, is not just to know this and not just to have this information. I mean, that's all it is, if that's all it is. It's just information, and now we've just kind of wasted our time.
Exactly.
But you have turned it into a self-realization tool, if you will. And so is it possible in a year or 5 years I could take the test again and my personality trait, the main one, the major, would change, could be different? How would I go about doing that?
Well, you'd become more expansive and more, given using my sixth example, I'd become more trusting of myself and others, have more faith in the world and in the universe. When you come back to the higher qualities and integrate those, and I'm going to get to the universal growth process, but as we develop, you know, you wouldn't see me the same. I'd be a much more trusting human being, which I believe I have become. You know, I have more faith in myself and in life and others, and, you know, more hopeful, and all of that goes with it. So it's all a path of development, and as we develop, of course, we show the higher, not the lower qualities. It is go with life and go with the type, and we become more open to becoming, you know, whatever is required in the moment, more giving if that's what's required, or more task-oriented if that's what's required, and more idealistic, or more able to be thoughtful. So we're not so owned and confined in all our energy going into, you know, the confinement of our original type structure. So it's, again, this path of liberation to become more whole human being, to be able to be whatever is required at the time, and to be more kind and thoughtful toward yourself and others.
So there's the learning to be more flexible, if you will, based upon that moment's circumstances in the environment.
Yes, it's called, you know, there's a little short saying for it, faces, meaning more flexible, more adaptable, more coherent, not cohesive, but more see the whole big picture, more steady, and more free energy. I mean, it's called faces, and it's just, and that's what the path is all about. And first, we have to start with wherever we are, and we use what we call the universal growth process, and it consists of four A's. And the first one is we call awareness, and awareness means the ability to be self-observant, to witness yourself, and to be more grounded and present, come back to that present moment, and nothing better than a little breath practice to be able to do that, and be more grounded and present. It's huge. And if we work at that, it's really useful. The second one is called acceptance, and by acceptance we mean non-judgment. We're all judgment. You referred to this earlier, Richard. We all get into judgment, like this is good, that's bad. When we get judgmental, we go away from love and toward ourselves and toward others. And those first two A's, the acceptance and the awareness, need to really go together. They need to be just interwoven, integrated, because when you can be grounded and steady and present and have an open heart to yourself, equal to anyone else, an open heart to others, then it's what we call empathy. And if you care about humankind and care about life in general, you're going to be more compassionate. So it's really working. You need those first two A's to really do the work. And where the Enneagram is useful, because those first two A's are part of all the world's great traditions, the Enneagram comes in around the action step, because it tells you where you're confined, where you're constricted, where you're limited, according to your old habit of mind, so to speak, your old pattern. And the brain is a pattern machine. You alluded to this earlier, Richard. The brain is a pattern machine. We have categories and patterns for everything. When you get more free of the pattern, you know, by being able to pause and to do the inquiry into it, like, well, why am I reacting? What's getting me upset again? Like I said before, I only get upset if I think I can't count on you. You're going to let me down and betray me. That's hardly ever getting upset about anything else. And so when I can work with that and come to discernment, is it really true? Can I just relax into things? Can I let go of that? Is she, my sweetie, really trustworthy? And of course she is. But as we do our work, the Enneagram is useful in that action step of pausing, doing inquiry, discernment, and moving into conscious conduct. So it's like going from conscious awareness to conscious conduct.
Hmm.
And then there's a fourth little OA, and we call that adherence. And adherence means In any work that you're going to do, you have to have a commitment. Intention is an irreducible element. Intention is an irreducible element. We need to practice, a daily practice of some kind. Just practicing with ourselves when we get upset and reactive, and befriending that and not being angry at ourselves, but being able to come back and do my work of inquiry, and most of the time, 90% of the time, you can just release from it and be back to presence.
Hmm.
So that's the fourth A, adherence or practice, daily practice of some kind. And, of course, we all have many opportunities every day because we all get upset and reactive.
Well, it's something that people can use as a tool, but what I'm curious about is, why is this particular tool, we'll call it, why has this made such an impact on you? Because there are other similar tools. Why is this one so important to you?
Well, yes, and especially, like I said, I hated typology. Myself, I get to be called a paranoid, and that's not a very nice thing to be called.
No, no.
Because when you're totally suspicious of everything, you are kind of paranoid.
Mm.
But frankly, it's because we have a lot of our neurobiology actually supports this. The brain literally is a pattern machine. And the way the neurons work is literally according to the interwoven pattern of flow of information and energy. And the information is our habit of mind, or where our attention goes, what we're preoccupied with. And the energy is kind of the driving emotion that interwinds with that. And so it's like we all have these patterns, and when we can examine the pattern, we can get that limits us, and we can see it doing the work, like I just said, of the four A's, then we can really get liberated from it. Because these patterns are adaptive strategies that are no longer, for the most part, valid any longer. Now, of course, there's still some things that can't be counted on or are dangerous, but you, when you can make that discernment, when you can see that, well, that's uncommon that that's true, then you can release from all of that, and you're going to be a more whole and free human being, can be more loving toward yourself and others.
Hmm.
So that's why the Enneagram, because it was about these patterns that are ingrained and so fundamental, it's right down to literally the way we organize the world moment to moment.
Now, you have a doctorate in psychiatry, correct?
A doctorate in type, right.
in type. Why that particular field? What was it that took you into that area? Because it's not an easy field, because there are no real absolutes in a generalized sense. There are really no absolutes, because our personalities are constantly changing, constantly evolving or de-evolving, depending upon your perspective. It's not
right,
like an architect.
Well, it's because I had, amongst other things, my practice of seeing people, my practice of psychotherapy with people. I had already discovered that some people were really judgmental, really critical of themselves and critical of others, which turned out to be type one. And then some people were just all into focusing on tasks and goals and couldn't, sit and relax and couldn't get into their feelings. And some people, there were people that couldn't get into their feelings, period, They're more like a five, like withdrawn into their head. And some people that couldn't get out of their feelings. And some people that were just owned by giving to other people and weren't paying any attention to their own needs, and then they'd get upset about people not appreciating them and nobody reciprocating enough. I was getting all these types on my own from just looking at the patterns of attention, where attention was going,
mm-hmm.
and where energy was going. This is before we did all this work on the neurobiology, which has just validated the Enneagram's worth. So when I discovered the Enneagram, it was like I was a little toddler figuring all this out on my own and finding it very useful. And here was this system that had been there, I believe as part of our evolution. And I could go into that a little bit, but it didn't go way, way back into history.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious. I'm always curious as to where people come from, how they get to where they are. What was the catalyst that drove you to this observation, as you describe it? Or has this been something you've just done all your life, even as a child?
Well, I had an interest in human behavior even when I was a little kid. And when I was 11 years old, I used to sneak up on the roof at night in summer and look at the stars and wonder about the whole world and the universe and what was it all about, and just trying to understand and figure out what people were all about. I mean, that's why I ended up, after going to medical school, going at least into psychiatry, because I was interested in what made people tick and how did they work and how could we make a better place in the world. So that was the background. And so just to naturally explore, I believe also in the exploratory instinct. It's huge, and it goes into the background. You know, the curiosity, to be able to be curious about what's there. And little children have that naturally. They're just into everything. It's just wonderful. And then a lot of that gets stamped out and goes into the background. If we could all keep our curiosity, I'd add that as another ingredient. Just the curiosity to know how things work, keep open-minded in that way, it'd be great.
I couldn't agree with you more. It would help us understand ourselves a whole lot better as well. And I'm curious, too, certainly you could have gone in so many different directions in your life, and yet you've chosen this path. And now we have this book, The Essential Enneagram, that's available through your website, enneagramworldwide.com. Why this? Why now?
Well, again, to me, we've explored this. It's a great way of working with conflict in the world. So much of what we do and so much conflict we have, if we could be more understanding of other people and their own habits of mind. And I can't even tell you how many people I've seen that said, you know, I would have still been in my first marriage if I'd understood something about these patterns back then. But mm-hmm. We were just so unable to understand each other and why we were motivated that we just didn't have any basis to stay together. I think it's a great means for conflict resolution. We've been using it in one of the several government agencies working together to bring more collaboration between them and to understand themselves with the Enneagram and collaboration processes. So it's a huge and useful tool, and it's all worldwide. It's in every why. You know, one question is, why is it in every culture, every place, in every language, every religion, it doesn't matter what?
Interesting.
It's so fundamental.
Yeah.
It's right down there. It's the molecular way we're organized.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that if we could at least just learn that regardless of our differences, we're here to work together. I've asked the question of some of my friends and acquaintances, what do you think our purpose here is? And it seems that the universal answer coming back is, we're here to experience and share joy. End of story. No, there's nothing else. Joy. That's it.
Yeah.
And I thank you so much for sharing your joy and the Essential Enneagram with us here on the program, Dr. David Daniels. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Richard. It's been my pleasure.
And I thank you for joining us here on the program. A reminder that the book is available through enneagramworldwide.com. You can get the book there. And we certainly hope that you will stay tuned to this station and join us again every Saturday. Join us again next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Till next Saturday, love.